We won the Emmy for Best Original Program. And I always felt that was really the time to get the Emmy. If that never happened again over the course of the series, that was the time to get the Emmy because it was so much in the zeitgeist of what was being talked about in terms of shows. It was groundbreaking at the time.
Oh, yeah, I remember it well.
And I'm very happy that that's when I was part of the show, and it gave me an interesting look into human behavior. I feel for 7 seasons, I had a front row seat to seeing the best and the worst in human behavior. And it was that experience that caused me to reflect on my own life, my own exploration into happiness.
This is Mind Body Matters with Greg Rennie and Rob Reiford.
Welcome to our show. Hey, Rob, right off the top, got a really, really deep question to ask you here. Are you ready?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, you know me, but, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Lay it on me.
Are you happy?
That's the question.
That's the question.
Am I happy? Yes, but it's an ongoing process.
How's that?
I honestly do believe, and I think the person we're going to speak to today believes this as well, but happiness comes from within.
Oh, for sure.
There are days that I'm happy and there's days that I'm not so happy, but at least I catch myself and I know I can change that.
I'm not sure how I would answer that question, really. I believe it's something from within, but also I'm not sure what the definition of happiness is to know that, okay, yes, I'm happy, right?
Well, it's the old thing, we've used this term before, but, you know, there's a glass of water, and it's half full. Now, is it half full or is it half empty? It's the ability to look at things positively.
And is the glass full of beer? I mean, you know.
Well, and the other question is it good beer?
Not light beer, but it's good beer.
Is it good beer? No. But seriously, no, I mean, in general, I'm a happy-go-lucky person. But I mean, there are days that I do struggle and I'm not happy.
And you said, you know, when you know that, then you try to do something about it. So the other question for you, and this leads into our interview today with Maria Baltazzi, who wrote a book and actually has a iPhone app about happiness. If you're able to write, direct, and as a producer, create your own happiness, like a film or a TV show, what would that look like?
Or a podcast.
Or a podcast, yeah.
See, I was just thinking about that right now. Is just, you know, something that makes me happy is this podcast that I do with you each and every week.
Oh, I'm glad.
And I honestly believe that we're helping others just to carry it forward, you know, help other people. That makes me feel happy.
Me too. And I hope we do. I hope we're getting somewhere and I hope people find benefit in it. Today, as I said, we are going to be interviewing Maria Baltazzi, and she was the supervising producer of CBS's Survivor for 7 seasons. Rob, do you remember Survivor?
I remember Survivor.
Me too.
What a show. And what an audience, too. Like, people were glued to their TVs watching Survivor.
And it was, for those of you who don't know, it was on an island. And there were tiki torches. And there were, like, 7 contestants usually at one time. And then they, depending
about,
on...
About that.
Yeah, and depending on how things go, they were voted off the island. Do I have that right? Am I remembering that right?
I remember. Yeah, you're voted off the island. And I think each episode leading up to the finale, there was a vote. Okay, who's the next to go? And that's what made the whole show interesting. We all speculated, okay, it's going to be Jane who goes this week.
Right.
So it created a lot of talk.
It was one of those water cooler type shows where office beside the water cooler, you go, hey, who do you think is going to be voted off this week?
There used to be Survivor parties. I remember being invited over to a friend's place and about 20 other people. And we sat there and watched an episode of Survivor.
It was so successful that they won an Emmy.
Our guest today is technically an Emmy Award winner.
Absolutely. Now, today, she's not going to talk so much about Survivor. She has a book out called Take a Shot at Happiness, How to Write, Direct, and Produce the Life You Want. And we're going to talk about that book.
Right on. I look forward to it.
So just a bit of background. While Maria was working on the TV show, and she had a number of TV shows she worked on, but specifically that one, she told me in this pre-interview that she was quite influenced by the behavior of the contestants. I mean, we saw that on TV. But as a producer, you'd be really involved with the behavior, good and bad, that was going on for these contestants in the show. And it kind of made her think about her life and her behavior and really what happiness is. And from there, it was kind of an epiphany. And she went on to get a PhD and write this book. And like I said, there's a iPhone app as well. She's climbed mountains, Machu Picchu, Kilimanjaro. Really looking forward to talking with her. Here is our interview with Emmy-winning TV producer, well-being teacher and author, Maria Baltazzi. Is it possible you can be a little bit closer to your mic for a little bit more presence? Or would that be kind of like having you bump into the mic?
How is this? Is this better?
Oh, that's much better. Yeah. Yeah, I like a lot of presence on the microphone. You know, we enhance it later on, as you probably know. You work with lots of sound guys.
When I am out on location, I actually give the sound recording guy or female assignments. You know, I have them capture certain sounds of the environment that I can later use in post, which they love. A lot of my environments are outdoors. Capturing sounds of crickets or lions roaring or, you know, that just really adds to the story that you're telling.
And I imagine you're not too keen on pre-recorded sounds for the work that you're doing. It just doesn't quite match, I'm sure.
I think if they're done well, you know, I like to be open-minded and use whatever tools are available to me. And if a pre-recorded sound works for what I'm doing, I am happy to use it. It's when it sounds fake that I don't like it, but as long as it sounds authentic. And there's certain sounds that I just don't even like. Rare exception, will you hear a cymbal crash in one of my shows. You know, there's just certain sounds that I won't use because it sounds fake to me.
At least the pre-recorded stuff I worked with years ago, it sounded fake because it didn't really have the ambience around it. Well, we can go on for hours about sound.
Yeah. Well, and usually that stuff also gets mixed in with music. So between the ambient sound that you have whenever you're recording an interview or B-roll on location, then you have your music. And then if you do use a sound effect that's pre-recorded, you know, it's mixed in. It's not isolated. So, yeah, there's a lot of forgiveness, I think, in that.
You mentioned that you're doing some work outside, so you're still producing, you're still doing TV and film work.
Yes, I still am. And I was referring to my career on balance. Most of what I have done through the course of my career has been shot internationally and in fairly remote locations more often than not.
I understand that maybe you did this because it was part of the theme of a show, but you climbed Machu Picchu and Kilimanjaro. Was that something that you did personally, or was that part of a show?
That was personally.
Yeah?
So
yeah. Good for you.
I climbed Kilimanjaro twice. And the first time I climbed it, it was after I had finished shooting a series for the History Channel. And it was about four modern-day explorers. Henry Morton Stanley's journey, retracing Henry Morton Stanley's journey to find Dr. Livingston back in the 1870s, the famous explorers lying Dr. Livingston, I presume. And we were shooting it across Tanzania, and just the adventure and all the you know, walking we did and watching, capturing the explorers, our modern day explorers, retracing Henry Morton Stanley's journey. Tanzania is the home of Kilimanjaro. And since I was already there, I just got it into my head I wanted to climb the mountain. However, at that point, I had never climbed a mountain. I certainly wasn't training. I didn't know how I would be at altitude, and I'm just a little bit afraid of heights. But there I was at the bottom of Kilimanjaro, and I was so scared of the unknown that I wouldn't even look up to see how far steep it would be for me. And I just put my head down and one foot in front of the other. And 6 days later, I was on the summit and I just burst into tears because I had broke through a limiting belief about myself, which is something that I talk about.
Yeah, you pushed through a fear.
Right. Yeah, I talk about this in my book and in the chapter about detachment, how we hold on to either the way something should be or a limiting belief about ourselves. And that was both a metaphorical and literal representation of not being attached to a limiting belief or a particular outcome. So that was a really great experience. And then the second time I climbed Kilimanjaro, I have a company called Sojourn Explorers, where I design transformational travel experiences. And our maiden journey was up Kilimanjaro, where I took a gentleman who was going through a divorce at the time, and then a mom and her son. And then the other big trek that I've done is I went to Everest Base Camp.
Oh, really?
I did that not long after climbing Kilimanjaro. I just got motivated to go conquer something else afterwards. And that's what doing something like climbing Kilimanjaro, meaning when you bust through a limiting belief, it gives you the confidence to go try your next goal, your next thing. And that has served as quite a motivation to do several other big things in my life, including writing a book about happiness.
And we're going to talk about happiness today.
Oh, goody, my favorite subject.
And difficult to define. And before we get to your book, the book is Take a Shot at Happiness, How to Write, Direct, and Produce the Life You Want. I like the tie-in from your day job, if I could say that.
Thank you. It was intentional.
Yeah, well, it certainly grabs people right away. And I understand that in the book, you make references to movies for people to kind of like tune in and kind of get the message in the book by referring to movies. Why did you choose that? Why did you choose movies as a reference point for your book?
A few different reasons. I wanted to anchor my book in something that made sense to somebody reading the book. You know, why me? Well, I come from the entertainment world. Yeah, I am a writer. I am a producer. I am a director. So I wanted to have something that was credible from my world and then applying it to happiness. And then the other reason is that we relate to stories. You know, we watch TV shows. We go to films to not only be entertained, but to also walk away with some lesson that you are learning, whether you're consciously saying, oh, I'm going to sit down to watch this film to learn something. No, you're not doing that. You're going to be entertained. However, more often than not, I think, you know, a good film, we leave thinking about it, processing lessons, whether we identify it as, oh, I've just learned a lesson, or I've just had an epiphany because I watched Pirates of the Caribbean, or, you know, whatever that blockbuster film is, it gets you thinking about life in some way. Just thought it made it relatable and fun. You know, so many of the books that are out there on well-being and happiness, they're really excellent books.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting on my bookshelf.
They can be heavy reads, yeah.
Yeah, that's something that was more snackable, if you will. That it still contains information that's backed by science, but it isn't an academic forward book. It's not more, because I felt like a lot of these books were kept you in your head. And I feel like my book, yeah, you may start in your head with a concept, but then through the stories and the activities that I have in the book, because I use, I give assignments for using your camera phone and journaling about the images you take to really help you better understand the concepts that you're reading about happiness. You know, how does love, how does gratitude, how does forgiveness, how do these core values of happy people factor into your life specifically?
I went over a part of your book, and as you're saying, you know, there are certain parts of the book that talk about happiness. Interested in seeing how you tie those things into your experience, because you have a degree in
conscious living.
You have a degree, you have a PhD in conscious living. And I wonder if anything in your book or anything in your training refers to this discussion that a lot of people are having online recently, and in the premise for this show is this mind-body connection. Everyone knows that it's connected, but for some reason we see it separated. How do you see that connected? The mind speaking to the body and the body speaking to the mind.
They're interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my whole book is about that. And specifically the chapter on health, I talk about health in terms of being three-dimensional, in that it is your mind, body, and spirit. It's all connected. What is going on in your head gets manifested in your body. And what is being felt in your body then becomes thoughts in your head. So they, you know, they feed each other. You can't separate them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that for, you know, many years that it was thought that the head and the body were separated. And I think in more modern times that has changed, and there is a greater understanding how the mind and body are really one unit. And I also wanted to go back to what you were saying a moment ago in terms of relating my book. In addition to having a PhD in conscious living, I also have an MFA in film.
Right, the Art Center College of Design.
Right, in Pasadena, in California. And it's the combination of those two that really get reflected throughout my book, because I have the research that I did on the different core values of happy people, what I believed are the core values of happy people. And then I help readers absorb that material through creativity, through taking guided, prompted, doing phone camera photography, and then journaling about those images. So when you get to the end of the chapter on health or love, then there are guided prompts that tell you, well, go look for this and take a picture of it, and then let's write about it. So you start to process the concept that you just have read in a way that is meaningful to you. So you understand, how does love specifically fit into your happiness framework? So my background is very much reflected intentionally in my book.
When we were talking on the phone in our pre-interview, you worked on Survivor for 7 seasons?
Yes, that's where I have my Emmy from, doing the first 2 seasons of Survivor. And I always felt this. I was one of the original supervising producers, and I was there for 7 seasons. We won the Emmy for Best Original Program for the first 2 seasons, and I always felt that was really the time to get the Emmy. You know, if that never happened again over the course of the series, that was the time to get the Emmy, because it was so much in the zeitgeist of what was being talked about in terms of shows. It was groundbreaking at the time.
Oh, yeah, I remember it well.
And we were getting Super Bowl numbers, and that's not an exaggeration.
Mm-hmm.
We were getting Super Bowl numbers every week. I'm very happy that that's when I was part of the show, and it gave me an interesting look into human behavior. I feel for 7 seasons, I had a front row seat to seeing mm-hmm. the best and the worst in human behavior. And it was that experience that caused me to reflect on my own life and my own behavior. And eventually, that became a catalyst for my own exploration into happiness. When I did my dissertation, by that time, I had qualified what I felt was working in my life. I was at a point in my life where I didn't feel anything was working. I wasn't happy professionally, and I wasn't happy personally. And I did not want to stay in that state. And so I started reading books and taking courses, and that eventually led to certifications and eventually going on for a degree. And what I did is I qualified the things that I felt made for happy people, you know, having loving relationships, having gratitude, having faith, however you define that for yourself, being forgiving. And then I went and researched to see if there was science to back up what I was experiencing and intuitively feeling. That became my dissertation and ultimately the chapters of my book.
There's science behind happiness?
Yeah. There's the science of happiness, positive psychology. Yes.
Oh, what occurs to me is, you know, brain chemistry, but it sounds like there's more to it than dopamine.
There's a whole field. Now, there's a whole field called positive psychology that came about through Martin Seligman. He was really the at the forefront of it, late 90s. It's a relatively new field. What Martin Seligman wanted to do, instead of focusing on what was wrong with us, he wanted to focus on what was right with us. And that became the starting point for positive psychology. And then the science of happiness is really a subset of positive psychology, where you are more specifically exploring well-being. And then you have the study of happiness, which has been made very popular by Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar, the happiness studies, where you have the science, but yet you also take into account films and art and how we interact individually and as communities and organizations, that it has a broader scope of what goes into looking at happiness.
In the book, you have core values of happiness habits. Like, what are some of those core values and how did you discover them?
Well, I discovered them by sitting myself down and really thinking about what are the things that made me happy.
Oh, okay.
And when I sat and made that list, there were 8 values, core values. And I had them pinned on my bulletin board for about a year. And then I took it down. And then a couple of years later, maybe even, you know, 5 years later, I found that piece of paper and I put it back up on my bulletin board, because not only were those still true, they were even truer in that moment because now I understood it better. And again, that became my chapters in my book. I just reordered them in the way that I thought it worked. So for me, I feel like the foundation is faith. And I'm not saying you have to have a specific type of doctrine or religion.
It just could be spirituality, right?
Right, exactly. And then after faith, that you have loving relationships. that these are loving relationships, being with your significant other, with your mm-hmm. family, with your friends, with your community, with the world at large, and then also taking care of your health in that three-dimensional way we were just mentioning, where you're considering your mind, body, and spirit together, not separately. And those three, to me, are the foundations that you build your happiness on, your life of well-being on.
In the book, you talk about resilience, and resilience is part of happiness. In what way? That we keep on trudging along and pushing through our fears, like you mentioned, with when you're taking on the fear of climbing. How do we find happiness by being resilient?
Well, I write about the core values of happy people and their habits. And you learn these as a way to be resilient. So when you have that understanding and those emotional tools, when you are facing challenges, you are better able to navigate those challenges. You recognize them sooner. You have the emotional tools to deal with them and come out on the other side of your challenge being more emotionally intact. That is 100% what I've experienced in my life. Mm-hmm. And so I concluded that happiness and learning the core values of happy people, learning and understanding happiness for yourself helps to build this coat of armor, if you will, to deal with challenges. I think happiness is a lovely word for resilience.
It sure is. For people that struggle with depression, your book might be a daunting task to read because, you know, when I went through my depression, you know, I saw, okay, happiness is a concept that I really can't grasp right now. Do you think that the parts of your book can be helpful for someone that's going through depression that just can't grasp happiness at all?
I recently had a friend, well, colleague, who bought my book for their son who has been going through depression.
Oh.
And yeah, and it's been helping. And also there was, it's a little bit of, it's related, but a bit different. There was also, there's this nonprofit organization in Los Angeles that takes care of families of women who are incarcerated. And so when they get out, you know, they also try and help them get back on their feet. And they donated 100 of my book along with a bunch of other books.
Oh, wow.
That they could choose from a group of women that were coming back into the world and back into their lives with their families. And almost all of them chose my book because they wanted more happiness in their life.
We all do.
The way my book is structured, I approached my book like I was putting together an episodic series where each episode stands alone. You know, you can have a complete experience just watching that one episode. It's not predicated on what has happened before. I mean, it might be useful to know what has happened before, but you can still learn a lot. So I designed my chapter, if you just want to work for a while only on being more loving, you can just go to that chapter and just focus on love for a while. And you just read that chapter and do those activities. The hope of my book is that it's one that you not only read once, but you keep. Mm-hmm. That you go to the chapters when you need to be fortified, when you need to be uplifted in being more grateful or being stronger in your faith. And then I also have a companion app that right now it's in the Apple App Store. It's also the same name as my book, Take a Shot at Happiness App. And the app has all the book activities, all the camera phone, photography prompts and journaling that you can do just right on your phone. So you can always be working on your well-being. And soon we'll have it. We're very close to having an Android version. And I did that intentionally because when I think it's when you can have something always with you, I think you are more likely to do it if you have it with you and it's fun, it's personal, it's accessible. And so that app makes having these ideas about love or forgiveness that you can work with it in a way that is tangible, that's fun, and makes it the content accessible to you and personal to you.
I would definitely will go back to forgiveness. Can you tell me a bit about that chapter? And did you use a movie reference to explain or provide an example of that? How did you tackle that in that chapter?
I drew a lot on Bishop Desmond Tutu.
Oh, okay.
His four steps to forgiving. I took a lot of inspiration from his work. And I also talked a lot about forgiving not only someone else or asking to be forgiven, but to also be self-forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really important part of the equation. That it's not just about somebody else forgiving you or you forgiving them. Sometimes you need to forgive yourself for things that you have done, you know, and to realize, yeah, you're human too.
We carry a lot of guilt.
Yeah, we do carry a lot of guilt. And the way I open that particular chapter on forgiveness, it comes from an interview that I had done on POWs several years ago, and interviewing Lou Zamperini, who was one of the very celebrated Olympic athletes back during World War II. And when the war came around, he traded in his, you know, jersey, his running jersey as an Olympic athlete, and traded that for a bombardier's jacket. And he found himself getting shot down in the Pacific and just floated around for days and days until finally he was picked up by the Japanese, who just made his life just a living hell. And they really tried to break him. Angela Jolie did a film based on part of his experience. And what happened is that once he was released, being a POW, he was just so tormented by that experience and so angry. And it drove him to be an alcoholic. And one day it was ruining his life. And one day he met Billy Graham. And that just changed his life. And eventually he went back to Japan and gave forgiveness to his captors. And it was in that forgiving that he found life again.
Uh-huh.
And the Dalai Lama talks about this. I'm paraphrasing that when you hold on to anger, when you are unforgiving, it's like holding on to hot coals.
Uh-huh.
And the only person that's getting burned is you.
Absolutely.
And that's what the chapter is about, is letting go of that anger, that hurt, you know, recognizing, and that's where the work of Bishop Tutu comes in, that you don't push away what has happened. You recognize the reality of what took place. And then to the degree that you can try and see, not necessarily condone, you're never condoning, but see how maybe that other person was in a frame of mind out of their mind that caused a hurt to you. And then if you want to meet this person, that you each take turns talking out your side of what happened. And then you reconcile, and either you continue a friendship or you just go on with your lives. You have a sense of closure, and now you can move on with your life. forgiveness is for living. You know, forgiving is for living.
Do we have to experience joy to be happy?
I think joy comes along with it. Some people think that happiness is a subset of joy. I think it's the other way around. I think joy is a subset of happiness. I feel that happiness is a state of being that you cultivate. And my book helps people to cultivate that state of being. I think joy, to me, is a fleeting emotion. I feel joyful when I am hugging my 8-year-old godchild. I feel joy when I'm out by the ocean and just looking at the waves and breathing in the salt air and feeling the wind. I feel the wind against my body. I feel joy in that, but those are passing. That to me comes and goes. But happiness is something that I feel is always with me as a state of being.
I see. Okay. Yeah, I agree.
And I define happiness is when your thoughts, emotions, and actions are in alignment with what you value.
Mm-hmm. There's a few things that are in your book as tips and exercises. Let's talk about three of them. Let's talk about savoring the good. That sounds quite interesting. Thought stopping and doing acts of kindness or volunteering. Can you elaborate on those three?
Sure. So savoring the good is when you look for positive moments throughout the day and you stop and you appreciate them for at least 20 to 30 seconds, because what you are doing is you are installing that memory, that positive memory inside your brain. And you do this often enough over the course of time, you are creating a positive neural pathway towards the good.
Oh, yeah.
And for almost 5 years, every day, I would find something that brought me joy, that made me feel happy inside, that made me smile, that made me laugh, and I would take a picture of it. And then I would write a caption of it. And that's essentially what my book is helping people do, was what I did for 5 years. And by doing that, I became aware of my thoughts and the things that brought happiness to me. And I would savor focusing on an image of a yellow rose that's lit by the morning sun and still has dewdrops on it. By savoring that beautiful moment through taking a picture, not only have I installed that as a positive memory in my brain, I also have a visual representation that I can go back to. And a lot of times you have also the positive experience of taking the photograph, and then you have the positive experience of revisiting that photograph. And many times you can see things in that photograph that you didn't notice the first time as you were taking it. So it's one of those gifts that keep on giving. And the other thing about collecting these positive moments is that it's also evidence, if you will. So if you are having a bad experience about something, you can go into your memory, your positive memory bank, and pull out a memory of when something was working. And holding an unhappy experience juxtaposed to a happy experience and favoring the happy experience over time releases that unhappy experience. So there are many benefits to savoring the good. The other one is thought stopping, and that's literally what you're doing. You're stopping your thought, and this comes out of cognitive behavior therapy,
which is very difficult to do.
The thought stopping is when you become aware that you are having a thought that's not productive, that's making you upset. You can recognize it and literally stop it. You can have a rubber band that you snap on your wrist. You can clap your hands. You can verbally say stop. And what you're doing is you're startling the thought. And when you do this, you now have the opportunity to choose a new thought. And the other thing that I have come to learn out of that is when I have an unproductive thought that I want to shift to something more constructive or just change the subject all the way around, is that I now recognize, oh, this is the small me talking. This is an old tape in my head that is no longer useful. I don't believe this about my, this tape is playing, but I don't believe this about myself anymore. So this can go away. And I find that really useful to do. And doing acts of kindness or volunteering, it creates this euphoric feeling. When you are helping someone else, it feels good to be helping someone. If you're a runner, there's what's called a runner's high, and it's the brain chemicals that get released into your body when you are either running or after you finish having a run that makes you feel good, you feel uplifted. And you have that same sense when you are volunteering or helping someone. And so this is called helper's high.
Oh, that's cool. I love that.
You're right. Exactly. So a play on runner's high, which is why I brought up runner's high, because this is volunteering is called, and that feel good feeling that you have from volunteering is called helper's high. And it's also what the Dalai Lama refers to as being wisely selfish, in that you are choosing to help somebody else, but you're also helping yourself.
Oh, yeah.
So yes, you could say there's a selfish motive because you want to feel good or you want the accolades, but it's good in a positive way. You're not hurting anybody.
There's a premise or an understanding within Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of my clients with addiction belong to Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the steps is simply that, is getting into the practice of helping other people, giving back. So,
sure.
You know, they're encouraged to help someone new in the program, newly sober, but in turn, they get the benefit back in spades.
Right. Yeah.
Imagine
their helper's high.
They have a helper's high. I love that phrase. Imagine if everyone practiced that.
I agree. I try every day to either do something nice for someone or pay a compliment. Either do or say something nice to at least one person, if not more. And it makes a difference. And boy, the person who is on the receiving end, so many times it's just, they feel it so unexpected, and it makes them feel special. It makes them feel good that you thought enough to say, you know what, you're doing a really good job. Or I really appreciate that you took the time to do this thing for me. You know, it makes them feel that they're valued, which is hugely important. You know, one of the major reasons somebody will leave a job, it's not money.
Mm-hmm.
It's feeling underappreciated.
Absolutely. Take a Shot at Happiness, How to Write, Direct, and Produce the Life You Want. How do we find the book? I read the summary. Now, talking to you, I want to read the whole thing. So where would I get that? Amazon or Barnes & Noble?
Yes and yes. So you can order my book online wherever books are sold. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Goodreads, even Target and Walmart. My website is my name, mariabaltazzi.com. And then also my social handles. I'm on Instagram at Maria Baltazzi, Facebook, LinkedIn. And I also am a meditation teacher on the Insight Timer app. So there are many ways to find me.
I noticed on your website, Maria, that you were recognized, the book was recognized by an organization. Can you tell me more about what that is?
So Best Holistic Life recognized my book as the best personal development book of the year. So that was an unexpected and really
wonderful.
Nice recognition. I'm very pleased.
You mentioned earlier about the Apple app. So the app on Apple, the Apple Store, is same name as your book.
Same name as my book.
Take a Shot at Happiness.
Yep. Take a Shot at Happiness. And the app follows the guided camera phone photography prompts and the journaling prompts that relate to each chapter. And it's personal and it's fun. We tend to do things that we enjoy and avoid things that we don't. So
it sounds like you're taking your experience as a producer and helping the reader or the person experiencing the app to be their own producer of their own happiness. Am I right? Am I picking this up right?
You are 100% picking it up right. That's the subtitle of my book, How to Write, Produce, and,
yeah.
and How to Write, Direct, and Produce the Life You Want. That's exactly it. It's
right.
And that's the big takeaway is happiness is within our control. You know, happiness is an inside job. We consciously choose to be happy, and then we do intentional activities to back up that choice. And you need to have both. Just saying, I want to be happy isn't going to do anything. You need to actively do something about it. And that's where my book really comes into play. It helps you in very specific areas of well-being. You know, it gives you conscious activities, intentional activities that you can do that will help you better understand yourself, your well-being, and what makes you happy.
We'll end off with a quote. This is from Nikos Kazantzakis. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. Is this from the movie or the book?
The book.
That you gave me the quote from. The book, Sober the Greek.
Yes.
Okay. The quote you gave me is some dialogue from the book. Come on, Zorba, I cried. Teach me to dance. Zorba leaped to his feet, his face sparkling. To dance, boss? To dance? Fine. Come on. Off we go then, Zorba. My life has changed. Let's have it. Why is that significant for you? Why did you pick that?
I love Zorba. For years, I have always loved the essence of the book and what that character represents. I mean, first of all, my background is Greek. My parents were both raised in Greece. My dad was born in Turkey, my mom in Greece. So the Greek culture has I've grown up with it. But I love the spirit of this character, because it has always taught me or reminded me that when things really get hard and you don't feel like you can overcome it, what do? You just stare at it, stare at that adversity in the face, and you just dance. You make light of it, because this too shall pass. Yeah, it's tough now, but you'll get on the other side of it. There'll be another day when you're dancing. And so that's what this quote, which I love, 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 reminds me, is this too shall pass. That always try and find the good, the fun in whatever it is that you are doing, because it does change your life.
Well, Maria, off we go. As the dialogue said, right? What a great thing to provide people a book to kind of access and produce their own happiness, because that's surely what everyone is seeking day to day. And we tend to kind of, and I'm sure you cover this in the book, you know, we tend to seek happiness through other things and other people, but it sounds like your book helps us find that within ourselves. And that's so nice that you're providing this.
Well, I have this lofty dream goal that I want to sell 1 million of my books, because I really believe that my book and my app and soon my online course can change lives. And you're right, happiness is an inside job, and happiness is within everyone's control.
Thank you so much for reaching out to us, and your people reached out to us and we coordinated the interview. This has been wonderful. I've enjoyed it, and I look forward personally to reading the whole book, not just the summary. So thanks very much, Maria.
Oh, thank you. This has been a real treat. I really appreciate taking the time and having this conversation with you. And I hope your listeners got a lot out of this conversation and will get even more reading the book and using the app that goes along with the book. So thank you. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you again. Have yourself a great day.
Don't worry. Be happy. Put a big smile on your face. Don't be bringing everybody down.
You know, like half the audience doesn't know what the hell you're talking about.
Where's the old Bobby McFerrin tune?
I know.
Anyway, it was a song that I used to actually just hum along to. And don't worry, be happy. And that's our theme today. And I mentioned off the top of this interview, happiness, I believe, comes from within, because we can we can make a choice. We can make a choice to be happy, or we can make a choice to be unhappy.
Yeah, it's a choice, and you can do something about it, as she was saying. Yeah,
take a shot at happiness.
That's the book. Yeah,
that's the book.
Yeah, take a shot at happiness. How to write, direct, and produce the life you want. And hey, I mean, write, produce, direct. I mean, obviously, you're going to be getting that information from a TV producer. So it makes perfect sense that she's going to give you the direction. And it's kind of cool because she gets you to take the photos and the videos of your life, right?
And document your own success story, if you will.
Right, exactly. And in relation to the chapter. But so what did you think of the interview? What's your takeaway?
Exactly what I just said. You know, we can make a choice. And as I said, you know, there's times that I catch myself, I'm going, oh, you're going down the wrong road, Rob. You're not, you know, you're not as happy as you could be. Let's change that. So that's my takeaway, is just understanding we do have a choice to make, and catching yourself. At least that's what I like to do with my own life, is catching myself when I'm not happy, and then therefore make the change. I'm looking forward to reading this book.
Yeah. Yeah. I went through part of it. I'm really interested in the app too. I think it sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
For me, you know, with happiness, I was just thinking the other day, I just had this overwhelming feeling of joy and happiness. So I think I acknowledge it when I feel it. I just don't know what the definition is still. I really don't know.
Can I ask you why you were feeling joyful and happy at the time? Was there something that happened in your life that made you feel that way?
No, it was like, as you say, the simple things, right? So my wife and I went out for a date night. We went to a restaurant and came back home. We chose what movie we were going to watch on Netflix. And I was just thinking, you know, I really like my life and I like my wife. And
I love your wife. Hang on.
Thank you very much. That's true.
Not like. Yeah. I like
Steph,
my wife
if you're
too.
Listening, yeah. It is love. It isn't like.
Okay.
Love my life, love my wife, love everything about things that were going on for me at the time, but I can't really describe it, really. Nothing in particular. I just realized that this is, you know, this is a moment in my life where, yeah, I feel really happy. I think the definition for a lot of people is, do you feel joy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways. Yeah.
I was just thinking about this while I was listening to you interview Maria. And sometimes I'm feeling so down, and I'll mention to my wife, I'm going, oh, I'm feeling awful right now, just feeling down. And then all of a sudden, I get a FaceTime call from my granddaughter, little Aaliyah, who is 4 years old.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, the joy I feel getting that call, you know, so that's... Mm-hmm. That's changing for me when I get that call, and it changes my entire mood. I might be having a bad day, and then I get her on the old FaceTime, and I see her face, and I start all of a sudden this perma smile.
That's so good to hear.
Yeah.
So good to hear. And good to hear, like you said at the beginning of the show, it makes me feel happy that you're getting something out of the podcast. We're having a lot of fun, and I'm glad that you kind of included the happiness in that.
Well, she talks, Maria talked about this in your interview, and she had mentioned about, and you had made reference to Alcoholics Anonymous and about, you know, the sponsor and the sponsee, and, you know, the ability to help someone else out can bring happiness to ourselves just by helping someone else out. doing, yeah, like absolutely. Being yeah. kind, being kind.
Being kind and compassionate, giving back. And yeah, there's a real reciprocal thing. It made me happy to know that you're happy with this.
Yeah, I had mentioned that back on our New Year's program about, you said, what type of change do you want to do this year, Rob? Or what right. do you want to do? And I said, right. I think I'd like to be kinder.
I do remember that.
That's exactly what she was talking about today, is just being kind, paying it forward, or just be nice to people.
So here we are further in the year. I do remember you mentioning that about being nice. Do you think that you're living up to that resolution?
God knows I'm trying.
But you're never nice with me, so you got to work on that, you know?
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, Mr. Rob, we are back next week with Keep Talking. And what's the subject for next week's episode of Keep Talking?
Well, that's the beauty of Keep Talking, is we never know what we'll be talking about. So let's just find out next week.
One thing I do know
is
that we'll be shooting the shit.
As we always do. I was wondering, do you want to change the title of Keep Talking?
No.
And we'll just call it maybe Shooting the Shit with Greg and Rob.
Now that in our career now as podcasters, we can say the word shit. But folks,
right.
when we worked in radio in the 80s, we could never, ever say that.
No.
In fact, some of us got in trouble for saying four-letter words accidentally, right?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Way back when.
Anyway, tune in next week. We promise it'll be some kind of episode about something. So we'll be back with that. And we look forward to providing that and giving a little bit back to our listeners. And meanwhile, be kind to yourself.
And most importantly, folks, be well.
Be sure to like and follow us on all social media. And if you like what you hear, hit subscribe, download, and share with your friends. Mind Body Matters is a Great Media production.